Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
Good morning and welcome to our second hour of Galesburg Live on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. I'm glad you're with us on this Saturday morning. Unfortunately, it seems like we may get shut inside again the rest of today due to the weather. We will continue to update you on any cancellations or postponements throughout the day as we've been doing this morning. And if any more come in, we'll bring them to you here, and we'll also have them for you on our website, WGIL.com. Just click on cancellations, I believe, under the local section at the top of the homepage. We'll have a listing of all of them there if you need to get up-to-the-minute information. It seems like a few good events for today on our events calendar on the website might get canceled or postponed, at least because of the weather. We talked the other night on Galesburg's Evening News with Nikki Malley about the Knox Jazz Year concert and a workshop that's supposed to be going on today. That might be one of the things that gets impacted by the weather. We'll keep you posted on all that throughout the morning. But want to get you updated on other things going on around the community as we've been doing this morning. And this hour, we're going to focus on economic development. And thought we'd bring in Ken Springer, president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development, here in the studio to recap all of it, or at the very least, most of it for us this morning. Ken, good morning. Welcome.
Will, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, glad to have you. If I didn't know any better, this last year and really the last couple of years for the partnership, as we've talked a few times, has been almost crazy busy, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think 19 was another pretty strong year for the organization. I think it was a very balanced year too, in terms of the types of things that we were working on.
Talk a little bit about that more. I think my memory, not being what it is, of course, remembers hearing about a lot of things related to maybe small businesses and some not necessarily large employers coming to the area. But talk about what you describe as balance here first.
Yes. So we're a full spectrum economic development organization, and what that means is we work with everything from individual startup entrepreneurs who may be creating a business that's only going to employ themselves, all the way up through large company expansions, relocations, that sort of thing. And so, you know, every year we never really know what we're going to get. And some years we're skewed more towards one end of the spectrum or the other. But I think 2019 was really good, particularly for, community aesthetics, two of the projects that we worked on filled up vacant buildings in the community. One was the former Aldi property there on Main and Henderson.
Yeah.
We also worked on the project that's, filling up Shopko, which, is going to be, that project's kind of going live right now. They just got their final approval from the city, this past Monday. But in general, you know, it was a good year. We had a couple projects went downtown. Wordsmith Bookshop, we worked with them. Nutrition on Main, which if you haven't visited Nutrition on Main, their shakes are like amazing. And and I say that not just because like I want to support the companies that we work with, but no, like legitimately, like I love their stuff, and it's really good. So
you're also in much better shape than I am too. So that probably helps out a little bit too. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. Yeah. So beyond the projects, we worked with the school districts. We have a lot of programming in 2019 that was directed towards K-12 education. You know, one of our long-term challenges in this community, Will, is with workforce and the skill sets. And we believe that the best way to do that is to go to our education system and make sure that our students are aware of the types of careers that are expanding and that are going to be expanding in the mm-hmm. next 10 years or so. And so we've been doing a lot of things with bringing companies into the high schools and taking high school classes out to tour different companies. We worked with some awesome partners, and we put together a event called CTE Signing Day, CTE being Career Technical Education. It was sort of like a parallel graduation ceremony, but really what it was designed to do is to celebrate those students that are getting technical skills at the high school and community college level, and then taking those skills and putting them into place in this region. And so we had a bunch of employers that were involved with that, and the students were all recognized for, you know, essentially picking a career that we really need, right, or a skill set that we really need in this region, and then going to work. And that's good for the student, it's good for the companies, it's good for our community as a whole.
I need to pause right there and take a break, and maybe let's after the break expand on that a little and what you're doing in that regard before we move on to other matters that you're working on here, or will be working on and did work on last year. Talking with Ken Springer, president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. We'll break here for a few minutes, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion as our second hour of Galesburg Live continues on this Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Galesburg Live continues on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. I'm Will Stevenson, joined this hour by Ken Springer, president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. We'll talk a little bit. We'll get you updated on the weather and our cancellation list and other local news coming up in just a couple of minutes, but a few more minutes here before we need to do that. We were talking right before the break, Ken, about you working with the school districts in the area to focus more on career and technical education. And in the last couple of years, I've heard you and I've heard Superintendent District 205 Superintendent John Asplund talk a lot about that. And I keep thinking about kind of the sea change that has happened from preparing kids to just go to college and be whatever they want to be to having that more specialized education, especially for kids who may not be all that enthused about going to college. Can you talk a little bit first about why the sort of roller coaster ride in that regard? I imagine from your perspective as someone who's trying to bring jobs and economic development to the community, the sort of focus on one area or the other, but not anything I think really long-term consistently, must be kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing, Will, and you phrased it very well, the roller coaster, right? So yeah. there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of momentum.
It's
right
my
now.
Favorite term for a lot of things, by the way, roller coaster, but yeah.
So just to take a little trip back in history, in the 80s and 90s, the focus in education in this country, I think shifted, and this is my own personal opinion, it shifted far too much into the spectrum of every student needs to get a four-year education.
Yeah.
If you look at the economy does not necessarily need every person to have a four-year degree.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just not the way economies are structured. We need technical skill sets. We need artisans, right? We always have.
I was going to say, is that historical that that's been the case, or is that just recently that's been the case?
Oh, well, I think the change recently was again in the 80s and 90s. You saw the focus kind of shift away from this career technical education. It was college or bust, right?
Yeah.
And what's happened, the byproduct of that is that we right now in the United States have a major lack of technical skill sets. We're essentially trying to make up for a lost generation,
yeah,
of technical workers, which, I mean, you go and you talk to manufacturing industry people, they'll actually use that phrase, lost generation. And so I think part of the reason why you're seeing such a laser focus on that right now is because we've got a lot of ground to make up. Not mm-hmm. only do we need the normal sort of age group of technical skill sets that you would normally need if the system was functioning kind of at a fixed level over the last 40 years, but we have to make up for this 20-year gap that we as a country suddenly decided, these skill sets aren't as important. And frankly, we've got a lot of work to do, and the good news, though, and me as a perpetual optimist, I have to put it this way, is that if you are a student and you are interested in getting into technical career fields like manufacturing or healthcare, transportation logistics, there, you know, the world is your oyster. There are lots of opportunities out there.
I'm interested to hear you say that, only because I imagine you and I aren't too far removed in age, but my parents told both my brother and I, and I've probably said this a couple of times for various reasons with various guests on this program, is that my parents said to us, my brother and I, we both had to go to college, we both had to get a four-year degree, and we both, in our cases, were not allowed to go to community college to start that path. And, you know, and my parents were basically just, especially my dad, just grew up, working hard and didn't necessarily have that full-blown college education. So it's interesting to hear a generation that was clearly built on hard work tell another generation, you know, you need to take your time before you can do hard work, I guess is what I'm saying. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. And it's exact. I mean, like to a T, that everything you said that your parents told you to do. It was the exact same thing that I was told. And I don't, I mean, I guess I don't regret the choices at all because I think I turned out okay.
But, yeah, I don't either. I mean, I'm doing, you know, kind of what I was trained to do and what I love to do. But, you know, it's still, at least in my industry, I don't know that parts of it really needed that 4-year degree.
Well, and I think the key thing though is that there's multiple pathways to having a successful and productive life in this country, right? And there are ways to get the skills that will afford you as an employee a comfortable middle class lifestyle that don't necessarily revolve around 4-year degrees. You know, and one of the other things that's really interesting that's happened is this whole you know, one of the byproducts, I think, of this push for 4-year degrees is you're seeing a lot of degree inflation in terms of job seeking. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of times you'll see a company and they'll say, oh, I can't find any workers. And they may be looking for different positions. And you ask them, well, are you requiring a college degree?
And well, then yeah, they say yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. You as an employer, you have just ruled out 75% of American workers,
mm-hmm.
right? 25% of workers in this country have a 4-year degree. And I want to be clear. I'm not knocking, the 4-year institutions.
No.
We need 4-year degrees.
But, yeah. Education is great.
Absolutely.
But there's also no substitute for good experience.
Absolutely. And it has to, I mean, in general, we have to look at this as a balanced approach. You know, one of the things, everybody looks at Germany, right? Germany's got the answers. They have.
I think we've been looking at Russia and Iran lately, but that's another discussion. But
well,
but yeah, go on.
Your labor force people are looking at Germany.
Well,
right? Germany's got this really well developed apprenticeship model where young people are channeled into workplace experiences in industries that the students have indicated interest in.
And that's not something that's happened there recently. That's been
oh no, they've been doing it for decades.
For them,
yeah. Yeah, they've been doing it for decades. Now that's one of the things that the United States is really rushing to kind of catch up with. So if you look at the directives that are coming out of the U.S. Department of Labor, there's this big push for apprenticeships in the mm-hmm. United States. And if you look, they're trying to copy the German model. But the other thing that the European countries do, Germany's one example. There's other European countries that do this. Is there is a sense of I guess like egalitarianism amongst skill sets. There's not this, oh, you're going to get a four-year degree or you don't have value as a worker.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, the professional skill sets, technical skill sets, everybody's kind of on an equal plane.
Yeah.
And they're all respectable career fields. And so I think we're starting to get that message here in the United States. And that translates down at a granular level to a lot of the work that we're doing with KCAP is we're trying to bring that message to Galesburg.
Yeah. I've got a couple of minutes left before I need to take another break. So let me kind of have you segue into how you're moving that into the high schools. And I imagine that starts here with District 205, but even any of the other schools in the district too, or in the county, right?
Yeah. Well, we've been taking a regional approach. We're looking at all the school districts in Knox County, and we've actually begun inviting school districts outside of the county to participate in the events that we're doing. But what we're doing well is we're bringing employers in, and we're bringing employers into the schools with a message that you can have a rewarding, fulfilling, successful career if you pursue career technical education, get the skill sets, become a welder, get your CDL, learn how to operate a CNC machine, you know, go into healthcare. These are all great career fields. And most importantly, those are the career fields that are going to be growing
yeah.
in this region for the next 20, 30 years.
We've been hearing, especially in healthcare here for a long time, there's been a great need there that the hospitals, the nursing homes, the skilled care, they've all been hard pressed to fill the available positions they have.
Absolutely. And if you look at, you know, the other indicator, Will, is look at the average age of those workers. You know, yeah. right now, I can't remember exactly what it is off the top of my head, but I think a CDL truck driver in the United States, average age is like 57.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a problem, right?
That's pretty much on the top half of the end of a career there.
Right, right. It's a problem, but it's also an opportunity, right? So what we're just trying to do is we're communicating to students. And I think one of the things you're going to see KCAP doing in 2020 is we're going to start communicating that more to parents as well. We've been doing really good targeting the students with the message, but also bringing that message to the wider community. Like, we need workers in these fields.
Our kids, I imagine students are probably pretty excited a lot of these fields, but I wonder if that, and it must be a concern that it must not be translating to parents very well, or at least parents may be saying, yeah, you should still go to college.
Yeah, and I think and again, we're not trying to force anybody to do one particular thing with their career or their life, but we just want to put the information out there that there are multiple pathways to prosperity and that there are significant job opportunities in this region right now that if students enroll in career technical education, there's the sky, you know, again, the world's your oyster if you have these skill sets.
You know, and on another hand too, every time we talk about a business opening or jobs coming to the area, you know, there are always people that are saying, oh, we need more manufacturing jobs. And while we're maybe some people are quick to question it, there's a certain amount of truth to that. I mean, maybe not manufacturing jobs, but a lot of skilled labor.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of misconceptions out there about what our 21st century economy is and is not.
Yeah.
And I think that it's very easy to get swept up in the literature and reading about automation and all these, you know, offshoring and these trends. But the reality is we're seeing a lot of growth in manufacturing and skilled employment, not only in our region, but also just in the country as a whole. You know, the U.S. builds more stuff than we ever have at any point in our country's history right now.
But it seems, though, like we're still hearing about things made overseas and having to be imported here. Probably, unfortunately, it sounds like more so than everything that's made in America.
But if you look at the data and if you go out and you talk to companies, that's not necessarily the case.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff right now that's actually coming back from China because the labor costs, production costs in China, shipping costs have gone crazy. And so –
threats of tariffs don't really help either.
Yeah, well, then there's the trade issue too. Yeah, that's the other elephant in the room. But you know, you go out and you talk to companies, you know, automation is one that I think is really misunderstood. You know,
yeah.
You go out and you talk to companies. Most companies are not at a point where they can invest in automation unless they are building mass quantities of one particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, a lot of the companies that we have in our region, they're building parts.
Are not building mass quantities.
Well, they're building parts for 10 or 12 different, you know, customers. And so, automation may not make sense to them. So I think, you know, again, people are getting kind of swept under by headlines. And the reality is there's still a ton of opportunity and there's going to be opportunity in this region for a long time.
I'm way past the time I need to take a break. But 30 seconds, Ken, on how you see this going forward this year in terms of what you're trying to do to help further all this along in terms of career technical education.
We're just going to be doing a bunch of events, a bunch of different scenarios out at the school districts, and just trying to bring this message to the masses. We want to see enrollment in career technical education go up. We think that's a very important thing for our economy.
And don't worry about going on about any question I've asked you here. We could probably go all day because we're going to be snowed in. It's no big deal. Ken Springer is the president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. We could probably talk, really could, all day about a lot of that, but we're going to move on to some other things that the partnership is working on after this check of local news and weather and our cancellation list coming up on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
Welcome back to Galesburg Live on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. We've had two great conversations today. We, of course, talked about in our last hour the Story Walk project for Standish Park that the library, the Park District, and the Heart and Soul Project have all partnered together on. And this hour we're talking economic development with Ken Springer, president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. I say all that together to say after we get off the air this morning, both conversations will be available for you online at WGIL.com if you miss any part of them here live this morning. Ken Springer, again, thanks for coming in today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Let's talk about some of the other things you've worked on and what you kind of and along the same lines see talk about what's ahead. Obviously, I think there's been, and maybe either rightfully or wrongfully so, depending on who you ask, a lot of discussion about recreational marijuana and the laws in that regard, and especially here with a dispensary, which has its roots, for lack of a better term, in the Quad Cities, opening up a location here. Talk a little bit about that and why you kind of felt the need to kind of, it really struck me that you were sort of jumping out on the forefront of some of that.
Yeah. So in the summer of 19, the legislature in Illinois decided to legalize marijuana. And we felt that we needed to make a decision as a community pretty quickly on whether or not this is something that we were going to wrap our arms around or not. What we ended up doing as an organization and as a community is, you know, we passed zoning to allow recreational cannabis, and KCAP got a project, and we were successful in getting a company to go into a grocery store that had been vacant for years.
We're talking about the former Aldi building at Main and Henderson here.
Yep, yep. So it had been sitting vacant for 7 years. Very high visibility property. Will, you know me very well. I hate vacant buildings. They it's like nails on a chalkboard every time I drive by a vacant building. And so that's a lot of what KCAP's been doing, is helping fill some vacant buildings, right?
Right.
So I think it was very, very it was a very prudent decision on the part of this community to decide quickly that we were going to embrace allow recreational cannabis sales in the community.
Along those same lines, we talked here a couple of weeks ago with Mayor John Pritchard about part of that, and I think his thinking was, well, he's not a big fan of the use of marijuana. It was a situation where he kind of felt like if you can't beat them, join them. And, you know, I can kind of see the positives and negatives of that, right? But it certainly was, regardless of how you feel, an advantageous situation.
Yeah, I mean, so the bottom line was, is the question, so it was a two-part question, is one, is this community going to be able to profit off of this change in policy? Number one, we know that there was nothing that we could do locally about the fact that cannabis was legalized, right? Again, not sure. Everybody likes cannabis. That's just a fact. The bottom line is, the policy was made in Springfield. Mm-hmm. Question number one is this something that we could profit off? And by profit, I mean generate tax revenue, generate some jobs, fill a vacant building, right? These things have positive impacts on the community outside of their relationship to cannabis. And so the answer to that first question was yeah, we could generate tax revenue. There's these positive outcomes that we could get as a community by having a cannabis business in our community. Question two was, okay, how do we get a cannabis business in our community?
Yeah.
And that is where the quick action part comes in. And so we really quickly said, let's find one of these first license holders, these existing medical dispensaries that can get a license to sell recreational. They're the first ones that are going to be in this market. Let's go get one of those. And I want to tell you, Will, in hindsight, it was really, really smart that we did that.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you why. So the whole cannabis industry in Illinois is rolling out in waves, right? So we had this initial wave where existing medical license holders were the only ones that could do projects. Mm-hmm. Wave number two, the state's going to issue 75 licenses for dispensaries in wave two. And then there's going to be a wave three and a wave four, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Well, the application process just closed on January 2nd for wave number two.
Okay.
Okay, so the state's going to grant 75 licenses. Do you know how many applications they received?
More than 75?
4,000.
Oh, good Lord.
So you can crunch the odds out on that. If
forgetting about how you feel about marijuana, there's a market for it.
Oh, clearly there's a market for it. And the decision point for local policymakers around the state of Illinois is, residents of your community are going to be able to use, possess, and buy cannabis as of January 1, 2020. Are they going to be able to buy that locally, in which they're going to spend their dollars locally, generate sales taxes, or are you going to force your residents to drive 30, 45, an hour, you know, minutes away to purchase that? Are you going to let those sales leak out of your community? And so, again, you're seeing a lot of communities in Illinois say, we might as well get something out of this, right? It's not our cup of tea. Not everybody's a fan of cannabis, but everybody needs tax revenue. Everybody needs property taxes. Everybody wants a few extra jobs in their community.
That said, though, it seems like we're seeing on a couple of fronts some maybe problems or concerns with how this has worked. One, again, supply being an issue, where a number of these dispensaries have had to close until they could get supply. Two, leave it to the... depending on how you feel about it, leave it to the state of Illinois to make regulations that are maybe making some people think, God, this is too expensive of a prospect to buy legally between the taxes and the fees and things like that. How do you solve those problems?
Well, fortunately, I don't have to solve those problems because I'm just a local economic development guy. I'm not the state on this stuff. But I mean, I think what's going to happen is, yeah, I mean, the market is wild right now. As you mentioned, there's a shortage of product. You're seeing a couple dispensaries up in the Chicago area just shut their doors completely to recreational customers because they don't have anything on the shelf.
Some, I think, in the Champaign area did
that. Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and my answer to that is I think the market is going to eventually reach equilibrium. Once there's more entrance into the market, there's more cultivators, you're going to see a balance. In fact, every state that's legalized and even in Canada, which legalizes the country, has gone through these supply shock, you know, price mm-hmm. shock type things.
Sure.
So I think, you know, give it a couple of years. I think it'll eventually level out. But yeah, you're right. Right now it's really, really wild.
Speaking of those problems, Nature's Treatment of Illinois, I think, was kind of hit a little bit of that with their, I think, location in Milan with some concern about supply. They're the ones that are opening up the dispensary here in Galesburg in the former Aldi building. So much so that they blame supply as why they were going to delay by a month opening up here in Galesburg. Can you talk a little bit about what you know about that? And on the other hand of it, from just a straight, we're putting something in a building standpoint, I wasn't so sure that they were going to open on January 1st anyway because of all the build out they were doing.
So, yeah. So, I'll just kind of reiterate what Nature's Treatment has said publicly, mm-hmm. and that, you know, that's they're pushing their opening back a little bit. Supply issue is one of their big concerns. And frankly, if I were Nature's Treatment, I would do the same thing. I think the last thing you want to do is open a business and then run out of product and have a bunch of unhappy customers, particularly when a lot of those customers are traveling in from outside. You know, it's winter. There's, you know, I think what they're doing makes a lot of sense, and it's an unfortunate situation. I think at a state level, well, what happened was, there was a disconnect between policymakers and industry, cannabis industry people, where the signal was made that there were not going to be these kinds of supply issues, and then the date was set by legislators to legalize. And I think what happened was there was probably a little three to six month gap in between reality and what legislators wanted to say. So
okay, I need to take a break, but talk in terms real quickly of that building. They've done a lot of build out and remodeling on that, I think, and again, partly because they're going to sublease space in that building to other entities, right?
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the plan. If you drive by the building, you'll notice right away. I mean, it looks way better. I mean, they had that kind of a.
It looks quite a bit different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're doing some trim stuff on the outside. They've done some landscaping. They're doing. Yeah. It's going to, I think aesthetically, it's going to improve the look a lot of that intersection, not only because it's taking a building that's just been sitting there vacant with the lights off for 7 years and putting it into use, but, mm-hmm. you know, they're doing some exterior improvements to the building. I think it's going to be much more pleasing for residents when they drive by.
They do at this point, at least from that standpoint, feel they're going to be ready to go at February 1st?
All I can go off of is what they've been posting on their Facebook, and it sounds like the February is still the plan.
All right. Ken Springer is president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. We'll take a break, and hopefully we'll try to touch real quickly on a few other issues that Ken's office has been working on when we come back. This is Galesburg Live on WGIL. This is Galesburg Live on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. Glad you're with us again this morning. We have just a few minutes left to talk about other things going on at the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development, and its president, Ken Springer, joins us this morning. In the short time I have left, Ken, I want to talk about what's ahead for 2020. And as much as we've maybe talked a little bit about solar power in 2019, at least in terms of the school districts in the area getting on board with that, that's not the only form of alternative energy that's been on your mind, right?
That's correct, Will. So looking ahead to 2020, We've as an organization begun talking publicly about a large wind project that we've been working on in the north part of Knox County, and we as an organization will be supporting that project. The next step for that project to move forward is to get local approvals,
the county board, mostly.
Yep, through Knox County.
It seems like there's been some discussion at that on the county level that my feeling is that among the county board there might be still a little bit of hesitation in that regard. Yet, you know, I'm from Henry County, and the second I crossed the county line to go back home, you know, there were all those big wind turbines up.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we've seen any hesitation on the part of the elected officials, but I mean, and just being realistic,
they do want to do their due diligence too.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's true for any type of economic development project. But if you look at what's being proposed, this is a project that would invest, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood. We don't have a final number yet, but we're thinking this is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of a $200 million project.
Wow.
Yeah. So. Underline that $200 million. That would be.
You can't really say no to something like that.
Well, it'd be the biggest single economic development project that this county's ever seen by investment numbers. Right.
I should have talked about this in greater length earlier in the show. That
we'll be talking a lot this year. But you know, it's equivalent of building a couple like full subdivisions in terms of the property tax impact. So yeah. We've been running the numbers on this, and what we're looking at is we think this project is going to pay in the neighborhood of $30 million. In property taxes.
Wow.
Over the next 20 years.
That's significant.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. It'd be a game changer for institutions like the school district that's going to be in the that's going to receive those revenue. I mean, it's going to be a major fiscal shot in the arm for every taxing body in this county that's in the project area.
Mm-hmm.
And for taxpayers, it's also a shot in the arm because if this wind farm is out there pumping millions of tax dollars into local coffers, those are dollars that you and me and other residents
won't have to pay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in addition to that, you know, you're going to get some jobs as a result. You know, a built out wind project doesn't need a huge staff, right? You need some maintenance techs and that sort of thing. But during the construction phase, you're going to see a lot of skilled tradesmen working on the construction of this project. And then also when the projects come in, they usually build the roads up a little bit,
yeah.
Because they need higher capacity roads in order to bring the equipment in. But overall, this is a huge project. It's going to be extremely good for the county. And you're going to hear a lot more about that in this coming year.
Are we talking about more or less just the putting up of wind turbines, or are we talking about building some of that equipment here, or how is this working?
Well, right now we're just talking about the construction of a wind farm.
Okay.
We'd love to see some of the manufacturing for components.
We've already think of some vacant buildings you don't like to see going to work for that.
Yeah, we've already got a little bit of residual benefit with the laydown storage yard out at the former Maytag property, which has been storing wind turbine components.
Yeah.
Now those have nothing to do with the project that we're talking about, but still, you know, so yeah, I think it's a good opportunity. Also in 2020, you're going to see KCAP, you know, is an organization. We're going to be undertaking a new strategic planning process. That's going to be a big thing. That's going to be a great chance for the public and stakeholders in this community to give input on our direction moving forward. So, you know, we think it's going to be a pretty big year, for the organization and, you know, we're just going to keep cranking, man. That's what we're doing.
And you have a relatively small staff. Is that – how much stress must you be under trying to do all of this on a day-to-day basis?
We have an awesome staff. So one of the things that KCAP went through in 2019 is we did lose a couple of our team members.
Yeah.
And so we replaced those positions. So we got some new faces in the office, a lot of new energy. But, yeah, I mean, it's not an industry where you just come and you punch the clock, right? I mean,
yeah.
Every day we're out there hustling, we're chasing down leads, we're trying to think of, you know, new and clever ways to bring companies into the area and help existing companies expand. I mean, every day it's something different, and I really got to commend not only my team, Taylor Ishman, Noah Poston, but also our board of directors who give us excellent governance. You know, this whole thing, I mean, KCAP is a team effort, right? This
mm-hmm.
is a pooling of resources and energy and ideas. And, I'm just the lucky guy that kind of gets to be the face of the organization. But really, this is a whole bunch of people kind of collaborating to make this community better.
Well, you got that Poston kid now working for you. So that might help out a little bit.
He's sharp, man.
He's one of the sons of our sales manager, Chris Poston. So I had to be, wouldn't be remiss if I didn't mention that just to make Dad a little happy. But, we could probably talk about a lot of this, stuff for a few more hours. And I know there's issues we probably could have gotten to, but didn't, but we're flat out of time. So we'll have you back here from time to time to talk more about things going on, I think, this year.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Ken Springer, president of the Knox County Area Partnership for Economic Development. Thanks so much for coming in, and hope 2020 is a success for you, because that means it'll be a success for the rest of us, too.
Awesome. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Ken, and thanks for listening to Galesburg Live this morning on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. Have a great weekend. Be kind to one another. Stay tuned if the weather continues to be as bad as it's expected today. We'll keep you posted on that. Cancellations, weather, any alerts that may come your way, we'll have them for you as well here on WGIL. But today's homeowner otherwise will be next after a check of local news and weather. Thanks for listening.